Good morning, everyone. It's good to be here with all of you and able to share our hope with each other. What I'm going to talk about today is endurance and suffering, and something that obviously is a big part of our lives. That it happened. For most of us, we on a daily basis, we have a near constant stream of slight annoyances or inconveniences that happen, and then we tend to have some on an irregular but normal basis, bigger challenges in our lives that are more significant that do cause some pretty strong challenges. And then for most of us, we tend to have a handful of times in our lives some truly immense challenges that, you know, can really, really test us, that can come close to breaking us. And so suffering is a major part of our lives and the challenges. And I kind of came up with four different reasons for suffering, four reasons that for the causes for suffering. And the first one is self-inflicted by ourselves or others through our own weaknesses, our own flaws and sinful behavior, or other people around us. We kind of inflict ourselves with, through poor choices, things that end up causing suffering for ourselves. The second one is randomness, just things that happen that are a result of us living in an imperfect world with imperfect minds and imperfect bodies. And the exact extent of this is hard to say in terms of, as believers, where do we feel that randomness fits in to the equation? But, there's the idea that's mentioned in Ecclesiastes about time and chance. How much is our lives made up of essentially randomness? It's hard to say, but it's hard to say, but I think none of us, I'm sure, believe that our lives are completely left to chance. And probably none of us believe that God intervenes in our lives down to every single last detail, no matter how small. So somewhere in between is probably where most of us fall in terms of what we think. But nonetheless, there is some random perhapsness to our lives. The third reason is things that are divinely placed in our lives by God, Christ, and the angels to help us grow. These are things that, in a direct sense, are brought to our lives, challenges that are brought to our lives. And the fourth reason, and this is an interesting one, is things that are divinely placed in our lives, challenges, to help someone else grow. So with these four reasons, the takeaway from this is that it's difficult to say why these things are happening, why challenges happen. And with the first two things, the self-inflicted wounds and the randomness, even with these, we know from Romans 8, verse 28, In all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. So things that come about in our lives, challenges that maybe are not, even if maybe God did not directly bring them, we know that God, to those that love him, God works in those things for our good to help us grow. And obviously with the last two, these are divinely placed. So of course with those, they are God is working with those. But it's a relieving thing to remember that our lives, ultimately there is a plan. And even when we're suffering, even when it doesn't really make sense or you can't understand why, or the pain is severe, it's so reassuring to at least be able to take away knowing that there is a God who loves us that is using these things either directly or indirectly for our own benefit. The last one that I mentioned, divinely placed in our lives to help someone else grow, that was inspired by, to me, what is a fascinating example of suffering in terms of the reason for it in Job's story, the book of Job. Obviously he's the go-to when it comes to biblical suffering, but you know, it's an interesting case with Job because Job was blameless and upright in God's sight. And yet then he has these almost unbelievable challenges come about his life, one after the other, in what we at least get the idea of quick succession. And just imagine, just try to put yourself in Job's position, where you're blameless and upright, you're doing all the things right, you're a godly person, and you're actually living what seems to be a pretty good life, and then simultaneously you lose your wealth, and you lose everything that you worked for, all 10 of your children die in a freak accident, and then you lose your health, you know, your own body fails you. And you go through these challenges that are, you know, you can't really imagine a worse scenario of just horrible things to happen all at once. And you imagine going through all this and then later discovering that this was primarily not even for your growth. This was divinely brought about and not even for you primarily. The reason I say that is because, again, the Bible tells us in the beginning, he was blameless and upright. And even though Job did learn something, and he certainly got some more clear perspective, and he learned some humility, and he learned how ultimately, you know, a little bit more how God works, but certainly the majority of God's retribution is saved for not Job but other people and friends of Job's, in fact. So imagine being Job and finding out that you went through all this tragedy on a you know, catastrophic scale. And then to find out that this was actually for, primarily at least, other people's growth. And you talk about kind of like having a, you know, a selfless attitude or thinking about others first. That would really test that. But the example that I take away from that, or the point I take away from that example, is that the trials that we go through, the suffering that we go through with the challenges in our lives, are sometimes very difficult to pinpoint exactly why they're happening, because there's so many different reasons. And for Job, that was what Job was at a loss about. Why is this happening? I don't deserve this. Why am I having to deal with these challenges? And again, the takeaway was, well, actually, it's for a reason you never probably could have imagined, Job. It's someone else close to you needs some real perspective. And I put this into your life, Job, so that they can learn. When something happens in your life and you start asking the why questions, why did this happen? What, you know, sometimes the answer is something that we would never be able to have concluded. We suffer ultimately, we are still dealing with the effects thousands of years later of the curse of Eden with Adam and Eve that led to this imperfect world that we have. If we go to the book of Genesis chapter 3, we see what the world that God essentially altered because of Adam and Eve. Genesis chapter 3, starting at verse 16, says, to the woman he said, I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. And to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. So we see here just exactly how imperfect things would be. It's an imperfect world with imperfect bodies and imperfect minds, and we are still dealing with those ramifications. But the thing is this was divinely brought about. This was God's plan for it to be this way. He could have made things different. He could have made a more perfect world, but he made a deeply, deeply flawed world and deeply, deeply flawed people. We have to suffer because of it, but it's because God allowed it. God chose to have that happen. So why did he choose to have it happen? Because ultimately he decided that's what we need. We need an imperfect world, and we need all the sufferings and trials that come with it. And you know, when we're surrounded by imperfection, we're surrounded by imperfection all around us. We're surrounded by imperfection that we see in ourselves, that we see in other people, and that we see in the whole world. And what we're supposed to take from this is a desire to look beyond what we have now in front of us, to look beyond this world and the life that we live. We're supposed to see that and think, yeah, this was imperfect, designed by God, and we should want something beyond this. When things are too good, when things are, you know, there's very little challenges in the way, and we're kind of in a blissful state, it does become very, very easy to just fixate on right here, right now, in our attitudes, because things are so great, right? When when things are going, you know, 10 out of 10, it's not easy to still maintain an attitude of looking to the future, because why would you? At least that's how our minds work. Why would we look to the future when the present is so good? And so then that is when we can become just so wrapped up in all the things in front of us and lose sight of any kingdom vision, any vision of grander things. And there's a clear, like from a statistical demographic standpoint, there's a clear inverse relationship between wealth and religion. And maybe that's why, you know, Christ was so, had some critical things of, you know, the rich with the, you know, their challenges, how it's easier to, you know, go through the eye of a needle than a camel to go through the eye of the needle than a rich person to inherit the kingdom of God. Because it's just so much easier to become focused on all of our luxurious lives around us and us living in, surrounded by wealth that we see in this country does present that challenge. And like I said, there's a clear inverse relationship. The wealthier a country is, the less religious it tends to be, and the poorer a country is, the more religious it tends to be. And in many ways, because a poor country where they just don't have a lot of material possessions and a lot of, you know, discretionary spending power, they don't have any distractions around them that kind of distract them from the ugly truth that is at the core of us, that, again, that we're deeply flawed people with, from a physical standpoint and a mental standpoint and a spiritual standpoint, and we're living a deeply flawed world. So another, and then reading from the passage that we read beforehand in James, just the first couple of verses of James chapter 1, it's a good chapter for tribulations. James chapter 1, verse 2, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. You know, this is one of those verses that that's a difficult one to actually live in your life. And because he says, count it all joy when you meet trials of various kinds. And for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. So it's not just kind of like a silver lining thing, as in, well, yeah, you're going through a trial, but the silver lining is that maybe you can learn something. He's saying, no, count it all joy, as in this is the whole thing is good. It's this is put in your life for your growth, and that it produces steadfastness that leads to perfection and completeness. You know, one thing about our afflictions is it can keep us humble with the right attitude, because when things are going great and we're kind of in blissful paradise, then it is easy to kind of think that we've done this by our own superiority, and that we can basically overcome any challenge. We can prevent any challenge, in fact, by our own minds, our own abilities. But in Deuteronomy chapter 8 presents an interesting perspective. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 2 and 3. And you shall, or I'm going to start at verse 1. The whole commandment that I command you today, you shall be careful to do, that you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land that the Lord swore to give to your fathers. And you shall remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And he humbled you and let you hunger and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that comes from the mouth of the Lord. So you see that he humbled the Israelites. God humbled the Israelites so that they would know ultimately that they can't do this on their own, and they're not capable of outsmarting this imperfect situation that we're all in. And that's what these afflictions can do to us. They can keep us with the humility to understand that by our own doings, we're not capable of conquering all of these challenges. We just simply can't, no matter how clever we are. And ultimately, we're never going to be able to achieve any sort of perfect existence in our current state. And we have to look to God to perfect us. Another thing that afflictions can do for us is they keep us longing for something greater. And I already mentioned this a little bit, but just when for me at least, and probably most of you are the same way, when I'm typically going through spiritual lows and, you know, lack for motivation spiritually, it's when things have been going pretty good for a long time, and I can start to become so enthralled with all the things that are offered out there, very, very enticing and tempting. And, you know, I can become, you know, I put all of my interest and time and energy into all these other things that are ultimately fairly meaningless. And that's when I spiritually suffer. And it's oftentimes when you kind of have one of those moments where it's, you know, you kind of check yourself and, you know, oh yeah, life isn't all that blissful. And there's the many challenges. And then that's, for me, the reset that oftentimes I need to remember, oh yeah, I'm looking for something greater than this. And I'm never going to be able to achieve any sort of perfect existence in my current state with my current mind, with my current body in this current world. And that ultimately one of those things or all of them are going to fail us. And so I think for most of us, that's where we start to long for something greater. We start to look for the kingdom. And I'm sure that, you know, this whole year has been, you know, somewhat of a challenge that we all are feeling the effects of, you know, one way or the other. And I'm sure that it's been, for most of us, the kingdom and looking forward to something greater has been more on our minds as a result. We just see how imperfect this world is. Romans chapter 8, verse 18 says, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God." And when we're going through times that are just great, really we're kind of at a high moment, it can kind of trick us into thinking maybe that, this is something to put all our energy into, this life. It can trick us. We can trick ourselves into starting to focus on that. And we need those challenges that come about to remind us where we need to put our energy into and what we need to be hoping for. And if you think about it, hope doesn't come out of success, or as in when we're very successful in our lives and anything. That's not usually when you're hoping for something. You're hoping for something when you're having challenges, and then you hope for something better. And it's our pain that builds character, that builds resilience, and that builds all the things that God is looking for us to have. And we have from an internal standpoint, what is essentially just a brief moment in time for however long our lives are to build character to that we will then see the effects of, for God willing, eternity. In Romans 5, it says, starting at verse 1, Romans 5, therefore, since we have been justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ. Through him, we have also obtained success, access by faith into this grace in which we stand, and we rejoice in hope of the glory of God. Not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that in suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. So you see that these things that suffering causes, it's a chain effect, and the end effect, interestingly, he mentions hope. So the suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. So obviously these are all very important things, and these are things that come from our challenges, our trials. Rarely do we strengthen our character and resolve during times of bliss. During times of bliss is when we're coasting, right? We're not looking at improving ourselves. We're just so engrossed in how great things are. And it's during and after tribulations that really lead to our growth. And I love the metaphor that we have of our own bodies when it comes to our own physical growth, because if we want to build muscle, build strength in our bodies, we do that by testing it, by pushing it, and actually causing, to some degree, some pain, because we're pushing our limits. And if you want to build muscle, you do it by strenuous exercises, lifting heavy things, or things that are challenging. And then once you do that, then your body, in a literal sense, kind of breaks down the muscle and then builds it up stronger. And so that process of breaking down the muscle and then rebuilding it in a stronger, perfect metaphor for how we tend to grow the most. And that is by having these challenges that really push us, really test us. And then it's kind of sometimes even it's a make or break scenario where we have to choose to overcome. And that's when we really, really grow our character. And you know, the bottom line is, no matter how blissful our current lives are, even if we have just the perfect scenario where we basically have no struggles, no challenges, no suffering in our lives, through some miracle, it's all going to come crashing down eventually, because we're all mortal. And so eventually our bodies will fail us. And whether it's sort of a you know, as we're aging, a reckoning of our own mortality, or whether it's, you know, our own body just truly starting to fail us, no matter how blissful our lives are, we can't escape that. And so it will all come crashing down. And if our lives were just all blissful with no suffering along the way, in that scenario, we would have gotten, most of us would have just become so consumed with our wonderful life. We would have put all of our effort and essentially all of our hope in our life right now, because it's so perfect. And then we'd have this unbelievably crushing blow when eventually we have that reckoning that I was talking about, and the party will end eventually. So in that regard, these sufferings that happen along the way, all the challenges and tribulations that happen throughout our lives, because none of us are living that blissful existence like I talked about, where nothing ever, no challenge ever arises, that keeps us from putting too much weight in those things, that keeps us from it keeps us looking for something greater, and knowing that knowing the limitations of this life. And I wanted to end with a couple of passages in 1 Peter 5. First Peter 5, verse 10. And after you have suffered a little while, the God of all grace, who has called you to his eternal glory in Christ, will himself restore, confirm, strengthen, and establish you. So through all of this, God is saying there's a reward that awaits us, and these challenges will be for the better of us in the end. And it's difficult to oftentimes have perspective when our suffering is strong enough, but we can at least take the hope or the understanding in knowing that there is a reason for all of it, and God works in our lives directly or indirectly to bring about a better existence for us, and ultimately to prepare our minds for an eternal existence. And through these, however many years we have on this, in this life, we're building again an eternal source of strength through our suffering that we have in this life. And you think about spoiled children who in many ways never really dealt with the challenges that, you know, most children deal with. These are spoiled children become spoiled adults, and you know, we've all probably interacted with people like that, and it's quite clear their limitations and how limited their perspective is, because they didn't go through some of those sufferings, and their parents said yes to everything, and they never had to deal with any of the trials of childhood. And so we don't really want to be that. And it's certainly not fun to go through suffering. And when it's intense enough, you know, you'd do anything to take it away. But God has put these things in our lives, and God has put us in a very imperfect world. And Close with James 1, verse 12. Blessed is the man who remains steadfast under trial, for when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life, which God has promised to those who love him.